First, I want to just point out that there are three, well, there are actually four so-called normed algebras. And we can start with the real numbers, and then we can build up to the complex numbers in dimension 2, the quaternions in dimension 4, and the octonions in dimension 8. One way of getting at the complex numbers is probably familiar to most of you, is that you can represent each complex number by a 2x2 matrix of that particular type. And that has some advantages in that the transpose of the matrix represents the conjugate of the given number. Also, there are two quantities which are going to be important as we proceed. One of these is the trace of the matrix, which if the matrix is in that form, can also be regarded as simply the sum of a given complex number and its conjugate, so it'll be twice the real part. And the other quantity is the norm, which is the determinant of that matrix, but it can also be expressed simply as the product of the matrix of the complex number and its conjugate. We can then go on to the quaternions, and we have an analogous situation. Quaternions can be represented as a four-dimensional vector space over the reals in the usual form. Conjugates are formed in an analogous way, and the trace and the norm can be defined analogously in terms of the sum or the product of a quaternion and its conjugate. And we can do this same sort of thing with the octonions, where we have an eight-dimensional vector space over the reals. As we move up from the complex numbers to the quaternions to the octonions, we lose a little bit in the structure of the underlying algebra. The quaternions, as we know, are not commutative, but they are associative. The octonions are not even associative, but they do satisfy a weak version of the associative law, and that's why they're referred to as an alternative division ring. That was mentioned in one of the talks earlier today. The alternative law is essentially this, that if you have three things to be multiplied together, if any two of them are equal, then the associative law holds. And that's true of the octonions. Of course, it's true if the associative law does apply. This is where we really have to stop with the development of different kinds of algebras. And I'm going to consider next the question of what would be an appropriate definition of an integer in each one of these systems. Before we go on to that, though, I want to take a look at some properties of the trace and the norm. The trace is an additive function, and the norm is a multiplicative function in the sense that the trace of the sum is the sum of the traces. The norm of the product is the product of the norms. And Dixon pointed out that every complex number, quaternion or octonion, satisfies what he called a rank equation. And in each case, the non-zero numbers of the system form a multiplicative system, which is a group in the case of the complex numbers or the quaternions, and it's only a loop in the case of the octonions. A loop is essentially like a group, except that we don't necessarily have associativity. It is a Mufang loop in that it satisfies the alternative law. Dixon proposed a definition of what an integer ought to be, and he said it should have these four properties here. The first property says that the rank equation has coefficients which are rational integers, and then that the set should be closed under subtraction multiplication and contains one. All of those can be boiled down to a much simpler rule that I'll give in a moment. And Dixon also wanted to insist that every such set be maximal and that it wouldn't contain any smaller sets with the same property. a better approach here is to say, in place of Dixon's definition, that the trace and the norm would be rational integers. That basically says that the rank equation has the properties Dixon wanted. And then that the elements should form a subring of whatever system we have with a set of invertible units. And that gets at the idea that it should have a closed system and that it should include one. And finally, and this is, I think, the critical point, that if you think of this as a 2, 4, or 8 dimensional vector space over the reals, that the units form a finite set which will give you a lattice which is spanned by the units. And then I'm not going to require that the system be maximal, but define a system to be maximal if it doesn't have any smaller proper subset. Okay, then if we look at what are the possibilities here, the only basic system of real numbers is the ordinary rational integers. There are two possible systems of complex numbers, which are well known, the Gaussian integers and the Eisenstein integers. We can see that these are the only possibilities for basic systems, because what we want is something where there are a set of units which will have which will span a two-dimensional space, since the complex numbers are two-dimensional over the reals. And there are infinitely many different kinds of quadratic integers, real quadratic integers and imaginary ones, but there's only two cases where you have both real and imaginary units, and those are the two in question. The Gaussian integers span a square lattice, and the Eisenstein integers span a hexagonal lattice. Here I've got a little diagram of the Gaussian integers, where we see that the two quantities 1 and I, regarded as vectors, obviously will span the lattice, and everything else follows there. The Eisenstein integers look like this, and here we have the hexagonal lattice, and these would be spanned by 1 and omega. Omega is one of the primitive cube roots of unity, and we would get this particular pattern. I have another way of looking at this. The Gaussian integers give us this pattern, and the Eisenstein integers give us that pattern. Continuing, the quaternionic integers were, well, attempt to investigate integers over the quaternions were made by Hamilton himself. Hamilton discovered the quaternions in 1843, and John Graves, a close friend of his, discovered the octonions shortly afterward. Cayley rediscovered the quaternions a couple years later, and they've also been called the Cayley numbers. Around 1856, Graves suggested to Hamilton that he might want to consider what kind of integers there might be. And Hamilton came up with the obvious case of a number where all four of the components would themselves be ordinary integers. And for that reason, I called these the Hamilton integers. About 30 years later, Lipschitz made a similar investigation, came up with the identical definition, and they're sometimes referred to as the Lipschitz integers. Hamilton really ought to get priority here, except that his paper on the subject was not published in his lifetime and didn't actually appear until his collected papers began to appear over 100 years later. The Hamilton integers can be regarded as just extending the ordinary integers by adding the units I and J, and if you have I and J, then you can get K and everything else. Around 1896, Hurwitz developed another kind of integers by including not just the cases where all the four coordinates would be integers, but cases where they would all be halves of odd integers. And in that case, there are 24 units. There's a neat way of defining those by using two generators, two generators U and V defined in this particular way. U and V, if you take them multiplicatively, will generate all 24 of the units, and additively, that you can combine them with W, which can be defined in terms of U and V, and then you'll have four units which will span the space. There's still another system which we call the hybrid units, and those are of the form linear combinations involving omega, which is, in this case, it's like the omega that we have for the Eisensteins, but this time the I is one of the quaternions. And that, together with J, can be adjoined to the integers, and we get another system. And in this case, there are 12 units. These are called the hybrid integers because if you restrict the basis vectors to any two in this case here, you can either get the Gaussian thing as a two-dimensional cross-section, or you can get the Eisenstein thing as a two-dimensional cross-section. So it's a sort of a mixture of the two things. Now, each one of these four three cases can be described as having a certain set of units generating a lattice of one or another of these types, and being the vertices of a four-dimensional honeycomb. In the case of the Hamilton system, the honeycomb is the honeycomb of tesseract, a cubic honeycomb. for the Hurwitz system. It's a regular honeycomb where the facets are 16 cells. And for the hybrid case, it's a honeycomb where the facets are all double triangular prisms. So if you take a triangle and then form a Cartesian product with another triangle in an orthogonal plane, you get a double prism, and those are the cells of the hybrid system. Well, continuing, the next thing is to look at the octonions, and the octonions involve, first of all, the Cayley-Graves integers involve basically the same sort of thing that we do with the Gaussian integers and with the Hamilton integers. Just take all eight numbers being whole numbers. this spans an eight-dimensional lattice, C8, and there are going to be 16 units. The multiplication table here demonstrates that this is not an associative multiplication. If, for example, you consider the product of, E1, E2, and E3, if you do it E1, E2, followed by E3, you get minus E6, and if you do it E1 times E2, E3, you get plus E6, and those are different. On the other hand, there are certain triples here where the associative law does hold. For instance, if you take E1, E2, and E4, they form a Hamiltonian triple. And so the subset of the seven octonions together with the reals would give you an associative system which would be isomorphic to the quaternions. And any cyclic permutation of 1, 2, 3, and so on will do the same thing. in 1923, Dixon described a set of integer octonions, and these are sort of like the analog of the Hurwitz integers in that they include not only cases where all the coefficients are whole numbers, but some of the cases where the coefficients are halves of odd numbers. And you have to be a little careful. You can't just take every case of things being halves of odd integers. And it turned out that there are 240 units here, and they have the form of four of the numbers being plus or minus one half, and the other four being zero, or it would also include all the cases where you would have plus or minus one and seven zeros. Now, Coxeter, in a paper in 1946, refined what Dixon had done and showed that there actually are seven different systems like this involving different selections of the points that are going to be in the set of units. And so these are appropriately called the Coxeter-Dixon systems. And the lattice that's spanned by the system is the E8 lattice. And these are the vertices of uniform honeycomb that Coxeter calls the 5-2-1 honeycomb, which is one of the ones discovered by Gossett in 1900, is what we have. Well, there are, we can represent the units in the simple E1, E2, etc. We can also tie them to the quaternions by making associations between E1, E2, and so on. And I, J, and K here represent the quaternions, and E is a new unit that's introduced that doubles the quaternions and gives you the octonions. And this allows us to see a connection between those two systems. Well, there are a couple other systems. There's one that's a double of the Hurwitz system by combining two different sets of Hurwitz integers in orthogonal four spaces. And in this case, there are 48 units. And then there's the compound Eisenstein integers that you can think of as a double of the hybrid system or a fourfold repetition of the Eisenstein system. And in this case, there are 24 units. Very quickly, one can prove that these are the only four systems of octonions by an argument that's based on the fact that just recently a complete enumeration of the finite loops of octonions has been established. And it turns out that the only possibilities are those that are already associative, in which case they're not going to be eight-dimensional, or will be the double of one of the three systems of quaternions, or will be the one exceptional system of the Coxeter Dixon system. So there are only these four possibilities for the units, and therefore there's only these four possible systems. So the summary is this, that we have exactly one real system. We have two complex numbers systems, the Gaussian and the Eisenstein. We have three quaternion systems. We have four octonion systems. I've listed the number of units in each case, the different kind of lattice in each case, and on the right, we have a honeycomb, which is either a regular honeycomb or a uniform honeycomb, whose vertices would correspond to the integers in each one of these systems. That's essentially it. I've got a number of references here, and I thank you.